Welcome to another episode of Our Blue Bahamas, where we promote the Bahamian marine environment that sustains our way of life. Today, we're going to be talking about protecting what's precious, sharks, turtles, and the future of conch in the Bahamas. I'm your host, Crystal. I'm joined here with Jasmine from Brief and also Heather from Brief as well. And we're going to be exploring the importance of protecting key marine species in the Bahamas. And we'll tell you what key marine species mean, like sharks and sea turtles, through legislation and public education. And also, we'll be growing the conversation around establishing a closed season for conch. Y'all, we've been sleeping on this one too long, right? We need to start this conservation conversation up again. So Heather, Jasmine, how are you guys doing today?
We're doing I'm doing well, and thank you so much for having me again.
And Heather, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you for having us.
Okay, so let's jump into it. Heather, why is it so important to protect species like sharks and turtles in Bahamian waters in the first place?
Yeah, so sharks and turtles are, first of all, apex predators. Not much turtles, but more the sharks. So when we think of sharks, we think of these big dominating creatures, but they're actually the reef cleaners of our coral reefs and these ecosystems. So they help to maintain healthy reefs, first of all. So that's why our sharks are critical. They help to take out, or shall I say eat, damaged or diseased species that may be contaminating waters or are unable to swim for themselves anymore. And so that's one of the main benefits that we get from our sharks. They really help to keep our reefs clean and really help to balance those food webs as well. And then going into turtles, turtles eat one of the Bahamas' largest natural resources, which is the turtle and seagrass beds that are found in the Bahamas, which allows for them to be abundant throughout the Bahamas because they have their food there. They have an amazing place to live. And so it's an amazing habitat that really invites turtles and as well as stingrays.
And conch.
Oh my gosh. We love our conch in the Bahamas. To these ecosystems. And it really breeds a really healthy environment that has a healthy food chain and encourages everybody to work in combination with each other in these ecosystems. And sharks do just that by keeping the top clean and taking out all those sick animals.
Yeah. And so if the shark is there to eat that very sickly fish, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about that being on your dinner plate, right? You want this big, healthy fish on your dinner plate.
You wouldn't even see it.
Exactly. So that's a good point you made, Heather. But when we think about turtles, sharks, conchs, we refer to those as key species because they're very significant to us. Jasmine and or Heather, you can chime in as well. I want to know what makes key species so significant. Like, what is a key species? What's that all about?
Well, key species means that it has some type of importance, whether it be importance to the ecosystem itself, or it can be a species that we
find
a cultural importance, like Heather say, or ecological or economic importance. Mm-hmm. So it's a balance. So it isn't just the same thing. So for example, sharks. Well, we know certain persons eat sharks and turtle meat, so that may have some type of, which is illegal, by the way. Mm-hmm. Let me just plug that in. So
illegal.
But that places them in a vulnerable situation, so that's one of the reasons why they're protected in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. But then when we think about our corals, which are our animals and also protected, they form our coral reefs. So that gives an ecological importance. And then also, to add on that and add another layer, it's also an economic importance because it supports fisheries.
So and tourism.
And then also, it's one of our coastal protectors. So when we think about a key species, it forms some type of and plays an important role.
It's like a foundational species that basically provides something, right? Some type of need for other species. Exactly. So when you talk about coral, and I think coral is one of the greatest examples, right. And corals are our rainforest of the sea, right? Mm-hmm. Because they have so much biodiversity. So because we have the corals, we have all of these delicious snappers and groupers, right. And we have these very healthy sharks as well, who are able to continue to keep our oceans healthy. And tourists spend, I want to say, thousands of dollars, but I know it's way more than that, to come and see the sharks. These shark excursions in the Bahamas are extremely popular, and they cost a lot as well. So, but people come over here without batting an eye because they know that they're going to get the experience that they want, right? And so there's also a economic, right? There's also an economic incentive for keeping that healthy supply of sharks and in oceans, not just for the food chain, right, which is all very significant, but also for tourism, right? And tourism is, as we know, is the main industry, right? It brings in the most amount of money that we have, right? Fisheries are also very significant, especially if you talk about conch, especially if you talk about spiny lobster. These are very significant. Those things are a part of that food chain, right? Those lobsters are living in that same seagrass that the turtles help to fertilize, and they help to and they thrive in, right? They contribute to. So everything is interconnected. When we may look at something and say, well, you know, turtles aren't really affecting groupers, but they are, you know, because their survival, also corals. Corals affect all of them. And so they're all relying, all of these key species, right, as well as other species that we know about, they are relying on one another in this very important Bahamian food web and food chain, right, so that we could have a thriving, beautiful marine ecosystem that supports many industries and also is very sentimental for cultural heritage. Right.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that, Crystal, because if we take a broader look at some of these species and what they experience worldwide, without this protection, they would not be in such good ecological standing. And when I say that, that's like a healthy population. They're repopulating. They have a habitat. They have a place for feeding. We know sharks are at risk for shark fin soup, with finning being an issue that we are not experiencing here in the Bahamas, but is an issue worldwide. We know conchs have gone extinct in some places that overfish them. And even turtles are still being caught to this day, not in this country, obviously. But for their meat and for their claws and scutes for different art projects and things like that. And so that's why when we really talk about the protection, it's really important that we emphasize it, and especially going into the future of conch in the Bahamas. Protection is really important. We've seen protection has been amazing when it comes to Nassau grouper populations. Protection has been amazing for sharks. We've seen populations of sharks go back to normal, and turtles as well. And so these are animals that were once heavily harvested for food and products, but now they are able to sometimes, depending on the regulation, be metered or not be preyed on at all anymore. And so I feel like, especially with these key species that you talked about are interconnected through all these ecosystems, it's really important that we shed a light on their importance and how we can preserve them for the future with these proper protection.
Yes. And with that being said, Heather, I also, I think sometimes we may take a lot of things for granted, right? And that's a serious, you know, human era that we don't really pay attention to a lot of times. And we say we have so much, and we look down and we see like a huge group of like 1,000 conchs or something. We're just like, we'll have these forever, you know, and we're not thinking that we're a little bit like the prodigal son, right? Because we have this big lump of everything, and we just spend it all without even, and before you know it, it's basically gone. So we think about, we can refer to other areas. So we think about elephants and rhinos, right? That have been hunted for many years, and for their ivory. We think about whales, right? Especially sperm whales and other types of whales that were hunted for their, you know, ambergris, right? Mm-hmm. For many, many years, and other things as well that they had in them. Also the bison, and they had so many. These things were abundant in the past, right? And now some scientists and conservationists are trying to find ways to reintroduce these species back into the environments, because so much have been lost in the overall habitat, and so many other species have been on the decline because of the extinction of these core species. And so it's a cautionary tale, and I think we should also be thinking like that. I don't think we should be swimming somewhere and see five turtles and be like, oh, we are gonna have turtles forever, you know. Mm-hmm. Because these things should not be taken for granted, because as well, on top of, we talk about CHOP IT all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Our threats to the marine environment, it's an acronym. And along with humans taking these things, animals for different reasons, to eat, to use for certain tools, or to use certain elements of their flesh. Along with that, you have climate change, you have habitat destruction, you have, you know what I mean? You have like a whole list, invasive species, you have a whole list of other factors that are contributing to the, to challenging these species' existence on a regular basis. So I feel like in this aspect, we have to think a little bit more broadly, right? About why we need to protect certain species. We also have, I remember this, the social media post I saw the other day, where it was this, I think it was a lady who got her finger bitten off by something in the water. They didn't really, identify it, but when the doctor saw it, they said, oh, it may have been a Caribbean reef shark. They had a photo of a great white on this, and it was like in the Dominican Republic or something, and I'm like, there's no great white there, but there's I say that to say this: we sometimes romanticize, is that the right word, or we stigmatize, or we exaggerate, right, to make sensationalize, right? But we need to think a little bit more rationally. Sometimes I think it's like pulling back and really, really like seeing the thing for what it is. You know, we like to get swept away with a lot of this, like, what do you call it? Like drama, right? Where you see like on TV and the shark movies and all of these things. And it's just like, oh, this thing is so bad. Or there's a video that's going viral about Sharknado or... or what is Deep Blue Sea, and you know, and a lot of these were actually filmed here, but people don't realize that the sharks were rubber dummies, right? They are CGI, right? A lot of the films that were filmed here, like, we don't even have those type of sharks here, right? And so and there are so many factors that go into like shark migration and patterns and everything, but there is this fear as well that people feel about sharks that make I don't know how else to say this, but make you feel like, you know, kill it, you know.
Crystal, I feel like it's really difficult to sell a shark to someone, you know, to mm-hmm, try and make someone to truly love a shark if they haven't already done their research. Mm-hmm. But you always have an odd member of your group that'll make it seem bad for others. Like, mm-hmm. we hear about certain things that happen in the water yeah. during the year, but that's not always going to be the case when you're going in the water and maybe interacting or encountering a shark, you know? And so it's all about opening up your mind, because I'm not going to see someone of a certain race or religion and assume all the terrible things that have happened in the past with that association. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. And so when it comes to sharks, it's just being cautious. Like I said, whenever we're on the beach, we're cautious of our surroundings. It's not going out free will, wholly trusting it. It's being cautious, trusting your instincts, and being educated. It always goes back to education. Being educated on your surroundings, what kind of shark is it? How does their behavior look? And all those things goes into play. But ensuring that you have like a safe experience with a shark, it's not very hard. There's a lot of encounters that can really open up your eyes to these experiences, especially with the ecotourism businesses that offer like hands-on experience with sharks, hopefully in a very humane way, where you can really experience maybe nurse sharks or lemon sharks at a dock and really have that safe experience and overcome that fear. Or you can just even start by putting your foot in the water. I know not a lot of people might have money to book a whole shark tour, mm-hmm. but just stepping out, calling out to education section, just educate yourself. That helps a lot of time to really dampen a lot of the fear that's associated. Yeah.
There are a lot of experts as well, right? Yeah. So always consult an expert, always, you know, be safe and, you know, go online and do your research, right? There are so many ways to embrace the ocean safely. And I want to get into more of like the legislation of everything. We know that we have, we talked about sharks and turtles being protected species in the Bahamas. So no catching, selling, or harming of these animals. That's what that means. We also have closed seasons for some fisheries, right? Three main ones that, you know, we often talk about is the stone crab closed season, which we're currently in right now. And then we have spiny lobster closed season. And we have Nassau grouper closed season. And I just want to go back to you a little bit, Heather, to talk about the significance of these closed seasons, just in a nutshell. And then Jasmine, if you want to jump in and expand.
Yeah, so these closed seasons aren't just random dates. They were specifically put in place at a time where we have seen and know that these fish are spawning. So spawning is basically when, depending on the method that the fish uses, it could be already fertilized egg. We know that's not spawning, that's just reproduction for certain animals. That's the conch. That's how it goes about in the conch. But spawning for some animals is when they release their eggs and the sperm into a spawning aggregation. So that's like hundreds of the same species of fish all congregating in one area so that they can release the sperm and the eggs to combine and fertilize these.
And that's what the Nassau grouper does.
Yes.
And then, it's the same for stone crab and spiny lobster?
One thing to note, sorry, for the Nassau grouper, these aggregations can be under threat from fishermen that might encounter them and find it as a hot spot of Nassau grouper, because there's, like I said, hundreds of Nassau grouper in one spot. So that's one thing to think about when we think about congregation spawning. And then with the conch, it's the same thing. So the conch kind of has to all congregate in one area as well, which is why we've seen a reduction in reproduction for the conch, because if you don't have enough males to female ratio, that's also an issue, because you need at least one male for a few females. And then conchs move slow, obviously. They hop on one foot. If you've ever seen a conch move, it's the funniest and most amazing
the
thing
conch you can see. The conch hop, which is hop. Hashtag brief games, hashtag sea camp, hashtag
and the conch hop is not very fast, so they're hopping miles just to get to one another to reproduce. So you can imagine you only have one leg and you're hopping just for a future for your species. Wow. Touches my soul, but
that really puts it in perspective. Yeah. It really does.
And the conchs come together same way other animals or humans do, just to, instead they lay an egg sac, obviously, and they lay it on the sand, mm-hmm. and it stays there until it starts to mature. It is at risk again from getting eaten as an egg sac. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing also to think about as a threat when it comes to conchs. And then stone crabs, I'm not quite sure, Jasmine. No?
So stone crabs, their claws need to grow back. So I know you should. So there's this video that's online that I encourage people to watch. It is on the proper removal of a stone crab claw. And so stone crabs have two claws. So it's recommended that you only remove one claw at a time so that they could have time to grow back the next claw. Because if you take off the two claws at one time, they can't defend themselves and it's hard for them to, you know, get around, and it lowers their survival rate. And so it gives them time to grow that back, that claw back. And I think that's a part of the reason why the time is set aside for them to be able to grow back, you know, their claws, and we have more claws for the future. Also, for talking about the Nassau grouper, I think some people may not be so familiar. So the Nassau grouper, we have many different types of grouper, right? Jasmine just saw a strawberry grouper on a recent snorkel, right? But there are so many different types of grouper. What we're talking particularly about the Nassau grouper, which is a serious, we were talking about key species earlier. It is a key species. It's a very important reef top predator. It's a carnivore. It eats smaller fish. So when you see those little fish in the ocean, be like, huh, why are they there? They're actually food for a lot of the bigger fish that we love, like groupers and snappers. And Nassau groupers are not just in Nassau or just in the Bahamas. They're throughout the Caribbean, and they are a delicacy. People love them.
Just frame your perspective. Nassau grouper is actually critically endangered. That's an endangered species. The grouper that we know and love and love to dip in tatathaws.
And it tastes so good.
Oh no, honestly, but when we think about it, it's important that we have policy mechanisms that can actually provide systems that we can enjoy Nassau grouper for future generations. But worldwide, it's critically endangered, and that's the step before extinction. So sometimes we have threatened.
Could you imagine an Easter without grouper? Could you imagine?
Wow, color grouper. Okay. Now?
That is. Could you imagine a Bahamas without grouper? Continue, Jasmine.
So I mean, when we think about it, you know, it have threatened, like I said, then it have dangerous, then it have critically endangered, and then the body word extinct. So we're trying to push it the other way, move the pin in the other direction. So having closed season is, hey, we do know that this is a fish that has cultural importance to the Bahamas. But let's observe the closed season. And to even go further, let's not even ask for grouper when the season closed, because that drives the demand lower. So there's a lot of things we can do, more than just observing the closed season, but, you know, to even add an extra layer so that we can be sure that this fish will be able for the next generation.
Yeah, like in Bahamian terms, let the fish catch itself. Let grouper catch itself, okay? We actually, and it tastes good. We know it tastes good. We know it's our favorite thing, the dip in tartar sauce. But you know what else tastes good? Lionfish. Lionfish is so delicious and soft and tender. If you've never had lionfish tacos, this is my shout out, my call to all those fancy chefs out there and all these nice, beautiful restaurants in the Bahamas, throughout the Bahamas. Please start offering lionfish tacos again. They were a trend like of several years back, but I've seen, you know, that trend go down a little bit. But it was so good. They're great for breakfast. They're great steam. Steam lionfish is delicious. Lionfish fingers, delicious. Lionfish tacos, delicious. So that's also an option. So let's see what else we can use and try to alternate outside of that. But not saying not to have groupers, but sparingly, you know, because we understand the dire state that the grouper is in. And you know what, once again, I said before that, you know, sometimes we take our fisheries for granted. We take a lot of our species in the Bahamas for granted. And because the Bahamas is so beautiful, you may actually fight to believe that anything could be endangered in the Bahamas because it's so peaceful and beautiful. And it seems almost like, you know, it's a paradise, right? It's called a paradise for a reason. Because it is so, it can seem so serene, right? But at the same time, we have had species and we have species that are facing seriously threatened. We have the Bahama Oriole, right? Which is a bird that is a threatened species and it's almost gone, right? We have the Hutia, right? Which is the Bahama Hutia, which is that our only mammal rodent, right? Our only land rodent. And that is also seriously threatened, right? We may not see that anymore. And we also have our manatees, right? So those are, and those are so important and so beautiful to us, right? If we talk about extinct, do you know we had seals? We had the Caribbean monk seals. We had them in the Bahamas as well. And they've gone completely extinct. And I know now everyone's like, huh? Seals in the Bahamas? No way. That's not. But it was a thing. It was very Bahamian, right? but it was something that lived here on our shores. And we don't see those anymore. So it is possible. And this is why we should really, really think carefully about exhausting especially our fisheries. Because these, you know, threatened is the, like Jasmine said, that's the final stage, right? We don't want extinction to be, we don't want that. We don't even want to hear that word, right? For our beautiful marine species. So we know that some populations are declining, but I mentioned earlier in the show, and I promised that I would get back to it, chop it. So we like to talk about the threats to our marine species and the habitats like mangroves and coral reefs. Jasmine, could you tell us a little bit about Chop It?
I would love to tell you about Chop It. It's one of these things. It's part of our curriculum at Brief when we teach kids about our marine ecosystem. It's a nice abbreviation, Chop It. And C is for climate change, and we know that that's the changing of our weather patterns due to the greenhouse effect, which is true global warming, and it's threatening all of our marine ecosystems. And then also H is habitat destruction. Habitat destruction could be natural or man-made, which is anthropogenic. And natural would look like through a storm, like a hurricane, or disease, like for example,
stony coral tissue loss disease.
Yes, so yes, like Skittle D, for short. And then also, man-made would be like dropping anchors on mm-hmm. coral reefs, just for an example in that way.
Or clearing out seagrass beds
for a marina, yucking up mangrove.
Yucking up mangroves.
For a marina, but...
don't yuck up the mangroves.
But then also, so that would be habitat destruction or mm-hmm. any type of land clearing. So that would be considered habitat destruction as well. O is overfishing, and overfishing is taking too much fish mm-hmm. or than is needed, or not observing
the close
seasons. So whenever you're not fishing sustainably, you're overfishing. Then P is pollution, and that's the introduction of any type of harmful material into the ocean. So that could be plastics, oil, garbage, anything that's harmful into the ocean will be considered pollution.
Mm-hmm. And it looks terrible too.
And we touched a little bit on eye. Eye is invasive species. So mm-hmm. when Crystal was saying, hey, go get lionfish tacos, and she challenged all of the chefs to start making lionfish tacos. Lionfish is an invasive species, and what it does is it eats all of the little baby groupers, what we need, all of the baby snappers, the baby mm-hmm. conch, and they don't have any predators in our region because they were introduced by
unnatural causes. Means. Yeah,
so they're not native in this ocean or this region. So that's invasive species is putting a strain on all of the marine species. And mm-hmm. so, and then we have
tea,
which is trade. And sad to say, anything that has some type of economic value, it's kind of prone to for it to be
exploited.
Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that with the conch. Mm-hmm. We love conch salad. Every place you mm-hmm. go has conch. Mm-hmm. as one of their dishes.
And then there's a demand overseas.
Yes.
And to add to that, Jasmine, too, the sharks, the shark fin suit that people are talking about.
Anything that has money attached to it is kind of prone for more overfishing or culling, or even not just for harvesting to eat purposes, mm-hmm. but a lot of persons shove a lot of our native species and carry them overseas for exotic pets. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing. So trade
and illegal trade
puts a pressure on our marine ecosystems and our fisheries.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And so in closing, I just want everyone just to briefly, pun intended, just to briefly state how the public can get involved with protecting these species and supporting the conservation.
I would definitely just encourage people to watch their seafood choices, observe the close seasons, be mindful of how much seafood you're eating weekly. And then if the restaurant is offering lionfish, definitely try to taste lionfish, see if it's something you'd like. And then maybe it can be something that you make your grouper replacement when you go to restaurants.
Well, I am coming for our Bahamian people. Sorry, don't come for me after this, I say this. But we just need to rethink our two meat options on Sunday. We could do well with one, because actually
one fish and one chicken.
They don't want to have
one. No. But the thing is, no. Fish honestly, so meat does carry a lot of greenhouse gas mm-hmm. emissions,
CO2,
and we do know that our a lot of our key species like our Nassau grouper, our conch, our spiny lobster, they have a lot of pressures on them already. So we could just choose one for Sunday. Mm-hmm. So don't come for me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jasmine. I didn't even think about that, but that's a good point.
Yes.
You don't need mutton and fish. You don't need mutton and mutton fish. You know, you could choose one. It's okay. It's gonna be all right. But thank you so much, Jasmine and Heather, once again. It was a great conversation today. Please stay tuned in to us every Saturday, same time, same place, and also follow us on social media. You can learn so much more and see so much of what we do at Brief, at Brief 242, BREEF 242. So thank you so much for listening to Our Blue Bahamas. Remember, the ocean gives us so much. It's up to all of us to protect it. Sharks, turtles, conch, grouper, every species has a role to play. So let's keep our waters thriving for generations to come. Thank you so much for listening.